Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 9, Episode 4 of Das Daily Zeitgeist for December 7th, 2017. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Potatoes O'Brien, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Yes, look at me. We're back. We're a family. And it's your boy, Miles Gray, putting the funk back in erectile dysfunction. How is everybody?
Oh, that's so good. Anna has been fired for trying to replace me yesterday.
Yep.
She's no longer with us.
Rest in power.
And rest in power. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat today by the hilarious Edgar Montplaisir.
Oingo boingo.
Yeah.
He's back.
The kid is back. Edgar, what's something that you've searched in the not too distant past that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
Oh man, my last search was how to not be self-destructive.
Ooh.
Wow.
That's dark, Edgar.
You just listen to 444 or something?
Yeah, I was listening to 444 and I was just like, figure this shit out, man.
Right. Wait, did something actually spur that, or were you just curious if there are articles about that?
Yeah, no, I was just like trying to like not repeat patterns and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just, you know, like at the end of the year, you start reflecting on your whole year.
Yeah.
So I was just like, let's see how I can improve next year. I always pick one thing to target. And I think for 2017, I was just like, I want to accomplish these outside things. But for 2018, I want to accomplish internal things.
Yes. Mastery of the inside so you can master the outside.
Correct.
Yes. This is real spiritual advice.
I'm so curious what you returned, like if there was anything helpful on that.
Man, it's a bunch of bullshit, man.
Yeah, that's what I would expect.
There was a lot of Instagram photos.
That is not where I would go. I would not go to the free internet for advice about how to not be self-destructive. Edgar, what's something that's overrated?
Meghan Markle.
Oh, shit.
I think this engagement.
Heat fly through this fucking room from that hot take.
I saw this ABC News article that said Meghan Markle's engagement offers hope up to black women. No, it doesn't.
Right.
That's crazy.
That is overrated.
If you're a black woman listening to this, a prince is not going to find you and get engaged to you. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
This is a very isolated incident.
It's extremely isolated. And it's just like, I don't know. It's bullshit is what it is. Everyone's hyping it, talking about first black queen or whatever. She's not. It's Prince Harry's never going to become king.
Yeah.
I've talked to some single women in their 30s who are like, it gives us all hope. And I think they're half joking, but they are like, they do know every single detail about the whole thing.
Right.
So I do feel like maybe it's a big deal.
The queen's going to assassinate.
I think it is a big deal that a woman of color is now part of the royal family. I think that aside is great, but I mean, that is purely because someone in the royal family like loves her and they're attracted. Right. It's not like merit based or anything.
Right. That's true.
But that's changing, you know, the complexion literally of the royal family.
That's true.
But yeah, I don't know if like a lot of the stuff of, you know, like, and why this means, you know, it's great for everyone.
Yeah. It only matters if she has a baby. If she has a baby, then it's just like, oh shit. Like, you know what I mean? Cause then he has like, it's like a black person with royal blood. Right now.
Yes.
There's no black person with royal blood.
Right.
They have a baby. There's a black, and he looks like Blake Griffin. And that's going to be insane.
I feel like the whole royal thing is like a guilty pleasure for people, but then the media treats it like it's an actual thing, like gives hope to black women everywhere. It's like, no, we just like think this is a fun, like gossipy bullshit thing to care about.
Yeah.
Like, will this change civilization? Like, will people look back like 50 years from now when women of color are like in every imaginable seat of power and like, and this all happened when Meghan Markle opened the gates?
Yeah.
Edgar, what's something that is underrated?
Shit talking as just an effective tool.
You said that's underrated?
Underrated.
Right now, based off the shit talking we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, not enough people are using, like, I was watching Draymond Green play defense yesterday, and I was like, yeah, he's like physically capable, but I also think it's a mental thing. Like,
totally.
He has these power over these people because all the shit that he talks.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it last night. I was watching the Warriors play the Hornets. And this dude talked shit to Durant, and Durant talked shit back to him, and then it just worked the whole game.
It was insane.
So I think more people should use shit talk. I think we should, like, have seminars about it and work, being like, here's how you can use shit talk to motivate yourself.
Obviously, that, in a sports context, that's easy, because, like, you ain't got shit, what you gonna do, what you gonna do? How do you now apply that to the world outside?
I can tell you how to apply it to the world outside. So somebody was asking me if I was taking my wife on a baby moon earlier, and Edgar had just arrived, and he just took out a post-it note off my desk and wrote, "You're white" on it, and just put it right in my face. That's how you talk shit to somebody.
And did you cancel your baby moon?
Yeah, I did. I feel worse about myself, but I feel better about Edgar.
I feel
motivated. But that's interpersonal.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, how do you do that? Like,
at
you
work?
Know, you're trying to close a deal.
Oh, you gotta,
oh, you're just trying to be like, you ain't no punk, right? Like, you're going to sign this fucking, like, you're going to buy these 500 widgets off of me.
Or you call the, have you ever seen the episode of Mad Men where they were trying to, like, pitch to, I want to say it was Honda or Toyota, and there was another company doing it, and then, like, they were just like, yo, we have to, like, trick them into signing with us. So what they did is they walked into the meeting and they said, we heard that you guys asked another company. That's dishonorable. And they just all got up and walked out. And then
they were like, no.
Yeah, and then they took them. And I was like, that's it. Like, that's shit talking to be like, yo, you fucked up.
Right.
You a piece of shit. Peace. And then they left. Use that in your workplace. You know what I'm saying?
So, but I think what we can all distill this down to is, yo, be mad manipulative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With your words.
Just basically. In any situation.
Be pointed with your words. Be pointed.
Yeah.
WWDD. What would Draymond do?
Yeah.
In all situations. All right. Let's get into the format. We're trying to take a sample of the ideas that are out there changing the world, trying to take the temperature of, the shared consciousness of the human species or our nation here in America, at the very least. My house is still standing. I should have said that.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, my house didn't burn down.
And that was not a joke. When I know it sounded kind of, that section started really, really dramatically with right. You were actually out there trying to save your home. So
shout out
to the LAFD too.
Yeah, but thanks for all the, good vibes and well wishes from everybody. Before we get into movies and news and pop culture, Edgar, we like to start out, as you know, by asking our guest, what's a myth? What's a misconception? What's something that the zeitgeist has wrong?
That misery loves company.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. I think when you're sad, you probably don't want anybody around. Like, you kind of just want to be sad by yourself. And then if someone else gets sad with you, like, for example, I get depressed a lot. And then sometimes, like, I'll invite my friend Gino over because he's depressed. But then he starts talking about how he's depressed. I'm like, hey, man, this is kind of my time to be depressed.
Like,
you're like, yeah, like, go back to Long Beach. I ain't trying to hear your shit.
I'm looking for support, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
You need a yes and my sad
exactly.
shit.
Exactly. So I don't think that misery loves, I think that's bullshit. Like, I don't want someone else to be sad around me because I have to focus on their sad shit.
Right.
Let me be sad by myself.
But I mean, I think not to be a total asshole picking apart that up. Yeah, cuck. But like, what about the idea of that phrase being that, like, miserable people love making other people fucking miserable?
Nah, I don't think that's true, because then you're going to think about how that other person's miserable. I don't know. It doesn't add up to me.
I think it's true in the sense that they do make other people miserable. Like, one bad person, they've done studies, and, like, one person who's like, has all sorts of bad energy in
right.
a group can make all the other people have bad energy, but I don't think it's anything intentional. I don't think they're sitting there being like, I'm
no, no, not fuck, at all. I think that's just part of human nature.
Yeah,
like,
it's just actually how we respond to other people.
Yeah,
not
we're empathetic
their
beings.
Fault, but
yeah, I don't think they love it. That's
yeah,
what I'm saying.
And also, if you could like stay at home, if that miserable person could have stayed at home instead of coming into work that day, they would have. So that's why you should be able to call in sick if you're just a little
or if they can shit talk, you know, like being like, you know what, Lisa, fuck you. You ain't shit. Your reports are all trash. Then maybe they feel better. You know what I'm saying?
But then, or someone needs to shit talk you out of your depression.
Absolutely. Yo,
you're like, you're one of these depressed assholes, are you? Man, fuck out of here. I'm not hanging with you. And you're like, wait. No, I'm not. I'm not.
I'm
cool.
I'm hella happy.
I thought you were cool. I thought you were level.
That's right. Let's shame people who are depressed.
Right. Ooh, man. The shit talking can go many ways.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that we're fixing today in the cultural consciousness.
Yes.
Shaming depressed people. We're figuring it out here. All right. Let's get into the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
So award season is sort of starting. I guess the WGA awards or what awards just came out?
The list for the WGA awards just came out.
Yeah.
But it was only television and like radio.
And
but the movie one's going to probably come out within the next few
and
days.
The WGA is
the Writers Guild of America.
Thank you.
So
gotta let people know, not everybody lives in LA. So
hey, listen, if you don't live in LA, I don't know who you are. Sorry, mom.
But so we were just talking about like what movies we feel like you usually there's a pretty good sort of sense of what's going to make the list and what movies people, at least in Los Angeles, are going to be talking about.
Yeah, before I said that I didn't know what was going to be like the main one, I would like to change that statement to I'm kind of disappointed, where it kind of just seems like same old, same old.
Right.
Like when we're going through the list of things, it kind of seems same old to me.
Yeah. So you introduced me to this amazing site, goldderby.com, mm-hmm. that is where people like put odds on what's going to win the Oscars. And yeah. you can see basically real time odds of like who is predicted to win. Right now, the list goes.
It's betting for people who didn't lose their virginity till senior year in college.
That's right. So the favorite is Dunkirk.
Which is insane.
That's the favorite?
Yeah, that's the favorite. Right?
That's crazy.
I mean, Dunkirk was cool, but I feel like there are many films that probably work on people more on an emotional sense than like cinematography wise. I think that's like the best achievement of Dunkirk.
It was an amazing movie experience, but it wasn't like moving.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, Dunkirk, like I don't know if I've said it on the show, but like I think it really encapsulates the feeling of like helplessness that people experience in warfare.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that's what the achievement of that film was, is like not using wanton violence and people's fucking bodies being blown and have to be like, oh my God, war is terrible. But like identifying these people and being like, yo, they have nowhere to go.
Yeah. The sound yeah. design in that movie was very, I watched it in Arclight Dome and you could feel it like being like, oh shit, there's bombs everywhere. I can't get out of this shit. But I wasn't just like, you know what I care about? These characters.
Did anybody else think that the one character we followed the whole time was actually like a spy? Because it said the mole. And the mole is actually like,
what they called that space they were waiting on the beach. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I was confused until I think one, like Kenneth Branagh or someone references the mole.
Right.
Or something.
Yeah.
As that thing.
I just wasn't paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can never pay attention to anything other than the fact that guy has a straight, horizontal
no
line
yes.
for a mouth.
Thank
There's
you.
No lips at all.
I'm glad I got you
just
on
an
team.
Inside out
team mouth. Calling Kenneth yeah. Branagh's no lips.
calling him out. Number two is The Post, which I don't really know much about
what
other than that it's about the Pentagon
on?
Papers. It's Tom. I think people are just saying Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when Meryl Streep was in a film, he gets nominated.
Yeah. Then Lady Bird and Call Me By Your Name are third and fourth.
You know Shia LaBeouf was supposed to be Oliver
Lady
in
Bird?
That film? No, no. The original, I think, yeah, the original director, James Ivory, he wanted LaBeouf to be Oliver, the grad student.
Oh, really?
Army
Hammer's character?
Yeah.
Huh.
That sounds awful.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Shia LaBeouf make love. You guys?
I have.
Yeah, you have, but...
Yeah, that's because we were in a
group together.
Most of
us have not been cued in on that. Then The Shape of Water, which is the Mexican director's...
Guillermo del Toro.
Ooh.
Guillermo del Toro's
Jack,
next
on.
Movie.
Guillermo del Toro.
You weren't jumping in there, I noticed.
That's why I was like, nope.
There's like three Mexican directors whose names I always confuse with one another.
Iñárritu, del Toro,
yeah.
And who?
And,
Cuarón.
Yeah,
Cuarón. Alfonso Cuarón.
Exactamente. Then Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which is the guy who wrote and directed in Bruges, also wrote The Pillow Man. And Irish playwright, who was a huge fan of the Walkmen. I'd always see him at Walkmen shows, weirdly. Then finally, Get Out is seventh.
That's insane.
Get Out needs to be, I think Get Out will definitely get nominated.
It's getting a nomination.
Yeah.
There's no way around it.
Even
though they submitted it as a comedy to the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
It's still getting a nomination. It'll probably,
I think
it'll win.
What I'm realizing is the Oscars are going to always repeat themselves. We have all the same things. A war movie. A deeply political movie.
Mm-hmm.
A movie about a wacky white girl.
Yeah.
And then gay love. It's literally the top four
or
movies.
Or like, and what it's like to be black.
Yeah.
Right.
Way at the bottom.
Right.
And if you can overlap those two, gay love story, what it's like to be black.
War movie.
Moonlight.
Right.
There it's a go. Quirky black girl caught up in the war.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Whoa.
Yeah, you would
like,
have
look at the top four for last year, and I'm willing to bet that they're not that different. Like,
well, La La Land would be the Dunkirk, and that it was like a spectacle that is like a love letter to cinema type thing.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. And then Call Me By Your Name, I guess, is the Moonlight.
Probably.
I don't know. Yeah, but I get what you're saying.
Look, we're not movie experts
right.
here.
We're not. None of us have ever seen a movie.
But based off our anecdotal observations and evidence, yes.
Yeah. But Miles, so your mom is a film critic.
Whoa. Oh, yes. She's a film critic.
Yeah, and you said she's super excited about Phantom Thread.
She's really. So, yeah, my mom, she is in the Hollywood Foreign Press, so they vote in the Golden Globes.
So she's seen all this.
She's seen it all. And yeah, she is like very excited about Phantom Thread, which is the P.T. Anderson and Daniel Day-Lewis film. because whenever they team up,
yeah,
it's always an amazing performance.
Yeah.
I have yet to see it, but I really want to see it because I'm a, like, the biggest P.T. Anderson stan, because he's from the Valley, represent. Mm-hmm. And also, Daniel Day-Lewis is just so about that method life. He is the original Method Man. He is Hot Knicks. He's the
Ghost
Rider.
Do you think he learned how to sell for this movie?
Who knows? I mean, because, like, in his off time, isn't he a cobbler or something? Like,
yeah, he fixes shoes. That's what he does, like, in his downtime.
Yeah, so, like, when he's not acting, this dude is working on shoes. So I feel like he probably has already cultivated many of these skills.
Right. Isn't this, apparently, Daniel Day-Lewis is saying this is his last film, but okay, this is something he's, right, this is something he said before.
I'll believe it when I don't see another film he's in for until he dies.
Right.
Because this dude has fake quit the game a few times and come back. So,
right,
man, retired man. I certainly listen.
What?
I'm not,
he's a great actor.
I don't care. I really don't care. What makes him a great actor? That he's just yelling all the time. That's it.
No, he doesn't yell all the time at all.
All right, what's he doing in that movie about the oil?
Completely restrained.
Okay, that's, what's he doing in that movie about the oil?
That's one film.
Okay, yeah. And then what's he doing
have
in
you
that
seen
movie
my
where
left
he
foot?
Throws knives at Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah, those Gangs are both, in New York.
Those
okay,
are his.
And then what's he doing? He doesn't yell in Lincoln ever.
No. Actually, he never
really
raises his voice.
I'm gonna look. I'm gonna look through
go
that
ahead.
Whole movie.
And
I'm gonna send you guys
also watch My
yelling.
Left Foot.
Yeah. Is he yelling in that?
Tell me if he's yelling in My
Check
Left Foot.
Check out My Left Foot.
Check out My Left Foot.
Yells.
Watch the movie first. When you start watching, you'll be like, okay.
He yells in the trailer for Phantom Thread too. I'm just like, this is it. This dude is just good at being mad.
He's like, you know, like Marlon Wayans screams in every film. Like,
yeah,
ah!
Yeah. So yeah. That's his. He's the white Marlon Wayans.
That's definitely going on in his obit.
He's gunning for that spot.
Daniel Day-Lewis once called the white
Marlon Wayans. I guess so. If you think about it, like white girls, like, you know, he's had to embody other people.
Yeah, is Marlon Wayans not the most method actor that you know?
He played a fucking baby once. You know what I mean?
And he became a baby for the part.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we're back. We're still just marveling at Little Man.
I mean, the conceit is so fucking flimsy because in the movie, Marlon Wayans plays a very short convict. He's like just a small man, a dwarf, or right. Whatever the little person is, the PC term. And they're trying to steal a diamond. They steal this gigantic diamond, and then they're almost arrested. But that's when the little baby man puts the diamond in a woman's purse, and that woman is Kerry Washington, and she's booed up with Sean Wayans. And they are a couple that are eager to have a child. So then Tracy Morgan and Marlon Wayans, they hatch a plot to pass Calvin off as a baby left on the couple's doorstep. So then you're also counting on the idea that this couple opens the door, has an abandoned baby, and they're like, well, we want a baby, so I guess we'll just take it, not
right.
just go to the authorities and be like,
right.
I think someone abandoned a baby. It's like, yep, finders keepers.
No, for sure.
If
At
Daniel
that
Day
point,
Lewis did it, it'd be nominated for an Oscar.
Well, like, if that movie had been made in the 80s, like, they would have just been like, a curse happens, and
right. That
Marlon
made him
Wayans
a baby.
Is suddenly a baby. Like, but, like, what at this point, like, why bother, like, trying to make it? I think it's like the Christopher Nolanization even, like, went to that point where they're like, it's real, it's gritty and realistic, like, this
right,
comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
they had to, like,
the reason they're so open to it is because they're a couple desperate to have a child.
Right.
Yeah,
that's,
as long
those
as you
are
can
their
emotionally
stakes.
Justify it, you could get away with
right.
anything. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, guys, it's Mangazi watch time.
Mangazi!
So there's all sorts of things happening in the world of Mangazi. The women of Mangazi are Times Person of the Year.
Hey!
Times Peoples of the Year. This is presumably because Trump turned them down, as he said.
Yeah, which was completely not the way. That's like how Time, they had to come back and be like, yeah, that's not how it works.
Yeah, until that issue hits the stands, nobody knows who the person of the year is.
Right, and then you only know the runner-up after the fact.
Right,
and did you
Trump,
know he's a runner-up?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's number
but
one.
But for destroying that. The presidency, it's not even like for being crazy. Like, it's all just about like, oh, we've never seen someone so off the rails and like
right.
unfiltered. It's not like... Because
right.
he's doing a great job.
He is all over the person of the year story for being a sexual abuser.
Right.
They interview a bunch of the women who he sexually abused. And then they also talk about this theory that I've actually heard brought up just in conversations with people. The idea that we wouldn't be having this movement of women coming out and, you know, saying that they had been abused if it weren't for Trump winning. But
1,000% I
yeah.
agree with
yeah.
that.
Yeah, because of the Women's March and then just because of, you know, this public sort of shaming of women by Trump and by his followers, you know, they were motivated to kind of step out. And yeah, I totally believe that.
I mean, it was a moral rock bottom, right? It's like, I remember when that tape came out, everyone was just like, this is it.
This is it.
It's a wrap.
Right.
And then to
bring
watch
in
that,
Pence to close.
Yeah. So then to watch it just like, you know, still yeah. go through was just like, oh, wow, okay. Niggas really don't care. Yeah, like
we're there?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people were just like, nah, we can't let this happen. And that's why the pendulum is swinging so hard the other way.
It was wild. There's an article that came out, I think last week or this week, about how Pence basically was like, after that tape came out, he's like, you know, I can run with Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like, an Atlantic article about how he basically had a soft coup ready to go.
Right.
And then Trump had his second debate where he just like stalked Hillary around the stage.
That
like
was
he was
so
fucking
crazy.
Jason Voorhees. Right. And people were like, yeah,
we love it.
We love it. We like this sort of menacing energy.
He's doubling down on making women uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that coup went away. But Pence has always just kind of been in the background, just ready to step in.
Like, yeah.
The second if Trump is like, you know, taken down by Mueller or like an assassin or whatever, Pence is going to just like pop up out of the bushes and be like, oh, hey, what's up?
Did something happen?
Didn't see you there. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's got a bag packed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's
yeah,
also
yeah.
another thing that came out. Someone tweeted a thing about how he's, you know, increasingly under pressure because of the Russia probe. And they juxtaposed that with an article that came out a few years ago about when he was in a frat, he ratted out his frat brothers because they had a keg. And they're like, oh, I wonder how this is going to go.
Pence did?
Yeah.
Like that's amazing.
Couldn't even keep his mouth shut to print his fraternity.
That was like
over
New York Times or something like that.
Yeah,
that
I think
story.
So.
Yeah, but.
That's the best.
I hope he rats. Hell
yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
We just fucking, let's find out everything.
If
but anyway.
He rats, he can come to the cookout at my house.
So back to the persons of the year. So Trump did come in second for, not for any great accomplishments. It's basically for the same reasons that made him person of the year last year. They were like, he has changed the presidency with the passing feuds, the wild accusations, the crude and divisive language. It's like, yeah, he had also changed how presidential elections are, you know, conducted in last year. And that's what made yeah. him time person of the year. So even though he's technically probably the person who, you know, when you think of this year in history books, you're going to think of all the damage that was done by him. You know, it's the same article as last year. You can't. You
yeah,
know,
it doesn't change. You know, just add more fuckery
right,
to the list.
Exactly.
And also keep in mind, remember when Hitler was person of the year,
right.
too. So.
Hitler won it twice, but he didn't win it twice consecutively.
No.
Think.
Yeah, he didn't
they
go
were
back
like,
to back.
People are over this Hitler stuff. Let's yeah. move on. I think they went Stalin.
That reminds me of this Kanye West performance. He was on like VH1 Storytellers and he was doing a song Amazing and he did a speech afterwards and he was just like naming people. He was just like, Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson, James Brown, O.J. Simpson. And then like the audience kind of goes, whoa, like O.J. Simpson. And he's like, but wasn't he amazing? Think about what he did. Is that not amazing? And I think like that's what this whole Trump thing kind of reminds me of is like them, like they're just like, you got to kind of just give credit where credit's due and like, the amount of shit he's fucked up now
yeah.
is phenomenal to think about.
No, he has definitely changed the entire political landscape and geopolitical landscape, considering like our allies are like fleeing and we're further causing more chaos just by him saying shit.
Yeah.
So
Trump truly is the white O.J. Simpson, we can say, I think.
Yeah, that will be on his.
But with not as good film appearances.
Right.
You know yeah. what I mean? Because literally give it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, he sucked in Home Alone too.
Like, he was terrible.
Honestly, he was really,
just
really
caught
bad.
Kevin in the Plaza Hotel lobby. That's
right.
it. He's cool. Not like OJ out here building an OD gun out of like a little suitcase and turned into like an anti-aircraft gun and Naked Gun, what, two or mm-hmm. three? 33 and a third?
Yeah. He's got one speed. And
Trump
that's
was
it.
In Little Man, though.
Ooh.
Second runner-up was Chinese President Xi Jinping. And coming in fourth was Robert Mueller. So those are the people of the year.
But also, let's not also, I mean, I have to call this out. Taylor Swift is also on that cover. And I'm not saying she shouldn't be, because
no
there are plenty of reasons why she actually should be. She successfully countersued someone that sexually assaulted her. I think that's great.
Yes.
I think, and she handled everything really well.
Probably
and
my favorite thing she's ever done other than Shake It Off.
No, well, that's for you. Yeah.
That's for you, Jack.
To me, I'm like, yes, that's credit where credit is due. And I think a lot of people too have been on the internet kind of like, what is she doing there? Because she also has a history of like silencing people too. So it makes, I don't know if it makes her problematic, but it's interesting that, you know, I think some people have really taken issue to the
fact. What do you mean by silencing people?
So remember, like, there was that blogger who was like, hey, when are you going to come out and tell people you're not a white supremacist, or like, you don't want to be associated with like this Aryan, you know, ideal? Because I think they called her.
They use her as like the ideal woman a lot.
Right.
Like,
the Aryans do, yeah.
Aryans are outright people. Like, they use her as like an idol.
They're, yeah,
like,
it was
Hitler and Taylor Swift.
It's because, yeah,
two
they
call
her a, quote, pure Aryan goddess.
Right.
And so then, right after that, the lawyer, like, demanded a retraction and a deletion and all this other shit. When, like, that's, you know, that's not her saying she's a Nazi. That's just someone being critical or vocal about what they feel that her place is. And
oh, Taylor Swift's lawyer came out and was like, you better take that
and
down.
And the ACLU was like, no.
Right.
Like, that's not how this works. But anyway.
This might make people upset, but I don't know. I feel like I think Taylor Swift is a perfect example of how people are willing to swallow racism in the name of feminism. And it shit kind of pisses me off sometimes. But, like, she does a lot of racist shit. Like, not only that stuff, but her attacks against a lot of black people, her cultural appropriation. But I think people are just like, yeah, but she's, like, a female icon. And it's like, that's dope, dude. But, like, I would never accept a black icon, for example, like Chris Brown. Probably what he did for, like, black artists, phenomenal. But I'm just like, I can't respect that because of what he's done against women. I don't understand why that's not a thing for feminism. It's like, people are willing to accept her because she's such a feminist icon, but they just like be like, we're just going to ignore that racism. Kind of reminds me of a former presidential candidate, which shit kind of pisses me off. But like, it, I don't know. It's, I thought it was whack to put her on there.
I think that's a very fair critique.
Hot takes on feminism from three dudes.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I will not take it further, is because we are three dudes. So moving on in the Benghazi train, Al Franken has resigned agreed to resign in the next couple weeks and gave a speech in which he didn't really take credit for doing any of the bad shit that they said he did. He said that there were some things that were outright false accusations and other things that were
he remembered very differently.
Remembered very differently from the accusers, which is, you know, not surprising. But I don't know. I still can't get past the fact that a woman came out and was like, here's a picture of us. He is grabbing my ass in that picture. And his response was, I took lots of pictures with lots of people that day.
Yeah.
So, like,
if you didn't grab their ass, I would be like, yo, she's, what the fuck are you talking about?
Why would I ever grab anyone's ass? Like, that is a horrifying idea to a stranger.
It's not the same as, like, when Dustin Hoffman was getting pressed by John
Oliver.
Right,
exactly.
You're not addressing what the issue is.
So, like, I don't know. Like, I just don't. And the fact that so many women have come out with the exact same accusation that he just, like, forced his mouth onto theirs. So, I don't know, man. At the same time, he did make a good point about, like, how he's like, it's somewhat ironic that I am stepping down from my office while the president of the United States has bragged about sexually assaulting people on tape, and the Republicans are running a dude who is, you know,
an accused pedophile,
and probably going to win.
But I think that's the thing that I really wish the, you know, this whole groundswell of holding men accountable. Why the fuck aren't we making more of a fuss about everything that Donald Trump is on the record for doing? Like, right now, there are even people being like, oh, well, Clarence Thomas, and he's like, okay, great, for sure. But like, this conversation, we need to also keep this conversation alive about all these people who have allegations against Donald Trump. And it's merely just because he's a threat to the agenda of the right that it's really not being brought up. I don't know. It just feels, I don't know, like, is it just dead because we feel like we can't do anything? So it's like, well, let's just stop talking about it because we've given up hope that we can hold this person accountable.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think people are just like, yeah, we tried this before.
Yeah, well,
and
I think we just need to keep talking about it.
Yeah.
Just don't let it go away, because think about all the shit that we've already forgotten about, right? Like, Puerto Rico, like, people still don't have roofs on their houses.
Right.
And like, we're like 900 scandals past that.
Right.
That, like, it just goes on this pile of things we forget. And this is very serious too. Like, I don't know. Like, come on, let's keep. We got to keep this conversation going.
Yeah, and then there is a new development in the Harvey Weinstein case. With apparently he might just get hit with a RICO. Yeah,
there we go. six.
So Miles, can you explain this?
Basically, a RICO, for those of you guys who don't watch The Sopranos and things like that, is the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. So a RICO charge is usually goes to like a criminal enterprise of many people working together, engaged in illegal activity. So six women who have allegations against him have a lawsuit, and they want it to be certified as a class suit to sue on the grounds of racketeering, civil battery, assault, and intentional and negligent infliction of emotional distress. So what they're saying is that this is a group between his army of spies, his, like, you know, investigators and editors at other magazines. He had a mechanism with many people to intimidate and influence the alleged victims. And so that constitutes as a criminal enterprise, because many of these entities, as they call it, the army of spies, were all, quote, facilitating and using wires and mails to orchestrate his ability to violate women. So they say this, A, allowed Weinstein to continue doing this over the years, and B, cover it up. And the lawyer goes on to say, when you're using wires and mails, which are governed by the Racketeering Act, for the illegal purpose of raping and sexually harassing, that falls squarely within RICO. So this is kind of crazy, because racketeering is usually like for legit, like for the mob, or like gangs.
Crime.
But this is interesting too, because when you have multiple people who are connected through contractual obligations or financial ties or whatever to work towards this common goal, it's like, I guess by this lawyer's definition, or this, their view of like the RICO Act, this falls squarely within that. So
a New York Times article came out yesterday just about, I think it's called Weinstein's Complicity Machine, but which, by the way, complicit, word of the year, according to the Oxford English Dictionary. But, you know, he would just be like, one phone call and you're done. And it actually had some, speaking of a certain presidential candidate, it had some disturbing things about, you know, the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton campaign, and, you know, how Lena Dunham, Tina Brown, the famous editor, former editor of The New Yorker, all these people told Clinton aides and Clinton herself that Weinstein was problematic. And, you know, obviously, I think Bill was well aware of it. They were told that he was problematic, and that those warnings were ignored. But there was also just an amazing sort of anecdote about how Weinstein would just be like, I fucking know Obama, you guys.
Yeah, that is wild. That's the ultimate fucking brag thing. Right. You want to say something? Well, I fucking know Obama. So who the fuck do you know? Like, you can't, there is like, none higher in the country. Said. You would have to, the only way you could trump it is be like, I fuck with Christ.
Yeah.
And Jesus is like, nah, bro, nah, I ain't trying to go up against Obama. You trying to have me swing against Obama?
Don't bring me into this.
Yeah. It's tough, man. It's, I mean, obviously that does not, that's not Obama endorsing him, but
no, but that just shows you like sort of how that works is like you donate enough to the party, you get brought into the circle, and then you kind of leverage that to intimidate people, because you can literally like you can actually say some shit like, I fucking know Barack Obama.
I mean, this is absolute power corrupts, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think that's just what it is.
As much as I love Obama, man, you have to wonder, like, what do you think happened when he went and visited Richard Branson on that island?
I mean, you know, he's got. I don't think Barack Obama is an evil person.
Right.
I don't think he's an angel either. I think Obama knows how to fucking party.
I
guarantee you that.
Here's what I think. You spent 8 years doing the best you can, and all these white people were trashing you and treating you like shit. I think he cloned all the Republican senators, and they got some rifles.
It's like an island of Dr. Moreau kind of shit.
I'm not
like,
saying Obama has hunted anyone ever, but he is definitely good friends with people who have hunted people.
Oh, 100%. You mean because he went to Harvard?
Yeah, we went to Harvard. He's friends with, I mean, Richard Branson's one of the richest dudes in the world. Like,
I think he's pulled the trigger on a drone himself before. He was just like, listen, I've had a hard day.
Right.
Yo, let me pull the trigger on this one.
Excuse me. Move aside, son.
Just squeeze off.
Just like, squeeze off real quick.
You know what's so funny? You were talking about how complicit is the word of the year. I was just going through the evolution of the words of the years. Just in the last 4 years, things just get so dark, right? 2013, the word of the year was selfie. 2014, the word of the year was vape. 2015.
So stupid.
The word of the year was the laughing with tears emoji. 2016, the word of the year, post-truth. Oh, and then 2017, complicit.
Oh man.
Like, dear we God. Are, based off the word of the year, like, we, what's the next fucking 2018?
We went from like childhood to like being victims in like a fucking police.
Well, literally,
lineup.
We went from 2015, literally going, ha ha ha, like, crying face, laughing right. emoji to post-truth the next year. Christ.
I think 2018 is slave.
Right. Jesus Christ.
The good kind of slavery.
Oh, the best of kinds.
That'll be a new show. The good slave.
The good slave.
Yeah.
Michael Schur from Parks and Rec. I don't know. Who do you think would play that? Tim Meadows? Does he need a job right now?
Nah, he's good. Who would it be? I don't know. That's for culture kinks to figure out.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. We'll figure that out.
And then finally, the OG Benghazi, Brock Turner, the Stanford swim team rapist, is back in the news. He has
trying
been
to appeal his conviction.
Right.
Why can't you leave well enough alone, bro? You got everything you wanted out of that case and you're going to appeal it? That's insane to me.
I mean, that just speaks to the height of this person's entitlement and their privilege that they think,
oh my God.
It's not fair that I have to be a sex offender. That sucks. It's kind of basically where he's coming from.
Nigga, you're not going to jail. Like, like, there are people who are in jail for less right now.
Yeah. No, that's why it's so outrageous. You know what I mean? Like, that you have the audacity to be like, well, you know, I don't think this was just. Get the fuck out of here, bro. You should be in jail. You should be in jail, plain and simple.
He got time served, right? Or something like that. Like, it was either time served or a day. It was something crazy.
So he was convicted of 3 counts of sexual assault.
He only did 3 months.
He did 92 days in jail, and he's appealing his conviction because he claims that apparently the attorney of the victim said that he raped the woman behind a dumpster, and his appeal is saying that that implied an intent on the appellant's part to shield his activities from others, whereas he was happy to openly rape her in public, I guess, is where right. he's coming from.
Jesus.
That's his appeal that he's making. This dude just is...
Get the is fuck out of here.
The literal worst. But his complaint is that this is going to hurt, you know, his prospects. And that's just basically what it comes down to, is he has the assumption that I have the right to a life of privilege.
Right.
Like, that's... I am a rich white dude.
Yeah, tell
I
that
have, the right to just, you know, live my life and do whatever I want to do. I shouldn't have to, you know, go and tell my neighbors that I'm a sex offender. And it's like, no, dude, you should, because
you're a fucking sex offender.
Because
deal with it. That's what the fuck you did. Own up to it. There are fucking so many people of color locked up for having weed.
Weed, bruh.
You know what I mean? Who are doing like real stretches in fucking prison. And this guy is like, well, I don't, like, man, I don't even get the fuck out of here.
And it's probably like, what neighborhood do you have to go through, like, to tell people? Like, if you're a rich kid, you probably live in a pretty secluded neighborhood. I don't imagine that you're going out into the city much. Who do you fucking tell that you're a sex offender? Pretty sure your dad worked out some bullshit that it ain't really that serious. I guess job opportunities? Man, sit on the fucking money that you have. Like, if you wanted a free life, I don't know, man. Some accountability for yourself, bro. Like,
yeah. And by the way, I mean, he should have faced up to 14 years in prison, but he was sentenced to just 6 months. It's just very clear.
And served three.
And served three.
Right. And served three. It's just very clear that whatever the goal of rehabilitation and, you know, teaching people a lesson about what they've done and, you know, how to fix their lives and fix their behavior has not happened with this dude.
That is literally, it's affluenza.
Well, he's not interested in that.
Affluenza.
At its worst. Dude.
He's not interested in being rehabilitated because he doesn't think he did anything wrong. Yeah.
Right.
Man, Brock Turner, your ass, bro.
Your fucking ass, bro. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. And we're back. So we wanted to go out on... you know, a light story, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But, you know, Trump has once again, you know, just decided that he is not going to follow in the path of Barack Obama, or really, in this case, any president ever before, because traditionally the United States has been sort of the diplomat between the two sides, trying to, you know, not clearly take sides with one or the other. And then he just straight up took Israel's side yesterday.
Yeah, and just declared Jerusalem the capital. But he's also trying to say that, you know, that's just what I think. We're not going to necessarily... It was weird. It was like the most half-assed way of declaring it the capital, but also trying to say, but, you know, we don't fully believe that, but we're going to say that, which a lot of people were, you know, saying that it kind of undermines any possibility of, like, a meaningful peace deal happening. And the crazier thing, too, is to think of, like, how he arrived at this process. Like, there are some reports that said that he would just literally ask any people. Like, he would just – someone would – he was having dinner with or just met. He would just be like, hey, what do you think about Jerusalem being declared the capital of Israel? And then, like, also Madison Tillerson apparently told him, hey, don't do this because right. it will cause problems.
Right.
Because this is a very, very contentious
– complicated.
Complicated issue. But chiefly because –
subtle.
Yeah. Well, it's religious history alone. Like, on one side, for Judaism, the Temple Mount in the Old City is the most sacred place in Judaism. And also, if for for Muslims, it is the third holiest shrine in Islam, because that's where Muslims believe was the scene of the Prophet Muhammad's ascension from earth to heaven. So, and for Christians too, it's also very very sacred, because
that's,
you know,
where Jesus, that's where Jesus last week,
it's where he was crucified, mm-hmm. on a hill outside of, like, the walls of the Old City. So it's, like, crazy how complicated this thing is. And he just simply, because he wanted to be different and provocative, was like, yeah, okay.
That belongs to Israel.
How long do you think until he, like, starts doing, like, policy decisions on Twitter polls?
Just openly.
Yeah, like,
hey, should I declare Jerusalem the capital of Israel? Yes or no?
Yes or no. And then...
And the third option is, I'm doing a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely seems to have a complete inability to view things the way that a diplomat has to view them, like, in terms of diplomacy, where it's not a zero-sum game. Like, he views everything transactionally. Like, yeah. If I gain, you lose. If you lose, I gain. And, like, that just does not connect with diplomacy. That's almost exactly the opposite of diplomacy. And then you put on top of that how wildly easy he is to manipulate, that basically anybody who gets next to him has the ability to just be like, you know, flatter him into doing whatever they want. And, you know, his son-in-law is definitely, isn't he pro-Israeli? Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, very, like, much strongly. Aggressively, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like he brings a gun to a banana fight. Like, he just fucking is always, like, trying to turn things into a, you know, straight-up battle instead of, you know, trying to...
Did you guys see what Tel Aviv did?
No, what'd they do?
They, like, tweeted. Like, I guess Tel Aviv, the city, has a Twitter, and they tweeted a gif of Jennifer Aniston on Friends going, I'm really happy for you, but I'm also very jealous.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy that's where we're at.
Yeah. Meanwhile, what, Hamas, they basically were like, okay, well, here's a third intifada that we're going
to
declare.
Right. So you were explaining, like, to me earlier what an intifada was. Why don't you tell them?
I mean,
people?
I'm like, look, I'm no Middle East expert, but intifada essentially is an uprising. And so the last time the second intifada happened, I think it was in 2000, and that was, like, two basically very violent years of Palestinians. You know, there's, like, suicide bombings and Israeli military killing people. And that was just started after, I think, Ariel Sharon, like, just visited the Old City. So, like, people die over
these kinds of things,
over this place. And that's why people are very careful about maintaining the status quo, because you don't want violence to break out over this. And just for this, you know, fucking asshole to just be like, well, what do the other presidents do? Like, apparently he was very obsessed with just being different than everyone else. Not right. even about what the ramifications were of the decision. He's like, well, who did that? Everybody else did that? Okay, I'm not doing that.
Well, if this was a big moment for him, then he has to be super pissed right now, because his big speech, he ended it with, I'm pretty sure his just teeth were falling out of his mouth.
Yeah, so when he declared this, I don't even know what to say. I guess a lot of people were like, why is Donald Trump slurring the shit out of his words?
Right. Like, everybody was crossing their fingers, hoping that it was a stroke, but... we think it was just his dentures.
Yeah, I mean, of course, everyone was like, oh, finally, he's stroking out yeah. on the fucking podium. But yeah, it sounds
like...
But
I think, like, we have a clip, actually. Yeah.
Let us rethink old assumptions and open our hearts and minds to possible and possibilities. And finally, I ask the leaders of the region, political and religious, Israeli and Palestinian, Jewish and Christian and Muslim, to join us in the noble quest.
Amazing to think this is his big moment.
Thank you. God bless you. God bless Israel. God bless the Palestinians. And God bless the United States. Thank you very much.
The United States.
He was like holding it together up until that last, like, it was almost like, oh, maybe he has like a dry mouth or something. And then he was like,
you hear him sucking it back in, like, after every phrase. He's like trying to pull it in with all the force.
Cause when it happened on Twitter, they're like, oh, there it is. He's losing his mind. And I was like, nah, if you've ever had a grandparent who's like dentures are coming out all the time, like, there's harder, your teeth are just falling out of the time. It's,
That's crazy. That is because one thing is he oftentimes doesn't seem that old. But
no.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that must have been the most embarrassing shit, right? Like you're saying, like this is a big moment for him because he wanted it because he was also very clear that he wanted to be as pro-Israeli as possible with this decision.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, well, let me puff my chest out.
I'm going to declare
it. And then not only do you slur your way through it like that. Completely just probably make, like he's already self-conscious, but also now we know you just have straight up dentures too.
Right. Yeah.
So like he could have just peed himself up there.
He ate a baby after that for sure. He was so mad.
or he probably had his usual meal of two Big Macs and two Filet-O-Fishes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which again makes me so mad that he loves McDonald's. That makes me so mad. That's probably for me top five worst things he's ever done.
It's funny on Desus and Mero, Desus was like, I'm glad that this man eats Filet-O-Fishes because I love the Filet-O-Fish. And at the very least, no matter how bad the world gets, the Filet-O-Fish will be around because Donald Trump needs it.
You know what? That's a good way to look at it. I'll take that.
That was the most positive spin because it has nothing to do with policy or equality or anything like that. It just has to do with, you know, a fake-ass fish sandwich being served.
I love that. It's a great sandwich, and you should stop your disrespect. It's not fake-ass. It's great.
I mean, look, I eat it too, but don't kid yourself. Do you think that's Icelandic cod?
Yes.
Okay.
McDonald's has never lied.
You know, I'm just realizing that because I'm looking at these at goldderby.com and the movies that came out this year. Fucking Logan came out this year.
Yeah, it did.
That's how long the year has been, you guys.
Get Out came out Logan, in January or February.
That's crazy.
I thought Wonder Woman came out last December. It came out in June.
I thought Logan came out in like a couple years ago at least. That's fucking crazy.
Wait, really?
Man.
You thought it came out? I mean, I knew it came out early this year, but
damn. It's been a long year, guys.
I don't think it's going to get any love.
Yeah. So that's another positive spin is that time is passing incredibly slow.
Yeah, time dilation,
new world
guys.
Of ours.
That makes me happy because I was like, man, I'm going to be 35 before I know it.
Like, not. Yeah. You wish.
I'm not even going to be 28.
Yeah. But you will look like you're 35.
Oh, I look like I'm 40 now. But black don't crack.
All right, what else is going on pop culture-wise? We got the LeVar Ball saga continues.
Yes, so I guess today we found out that LaMelo Ball, the youngest Ball, which sounds like the weirdest thing to say, he is signed with an agent, meaning that he has effectively surrendered any chance of him signing for a college and getting into the NBA the traditional way.
Right.
Is, you know, sign with D1 school, prove yourself and get drafted. So because his dad took him out of high school in October, he's a junior, and took him out of high school, and he's like, I'm going to train him myself.
Right.
And now, because his brother, Young Thug, the shoplifting extraordinaire, he was suspended from playing basketball at UCLA. LeVar took him out too, and the plan is now for the two of them to play professionally overseas together. That is what LeVar Ball's vision is. And then they're going to do their thing over there and come back like the prodigal sons they were meant to be.
I don't know.
I was asked a question once, which was, should we support LeVar Ball just because he's black? And I think, fuck no, man. This dude's insane. Like, I think literally to take LaMelo out of high school
ridiculous.
Was one of the dumbest choices. But now to prevent him from even going to college is just so selfish. Like, this man just wants to prove that he's smarter than these institutions, which I totally get. Man versus the institution, dope. But at the cost of your son's life, I can't sign off on that. Like, that's so wild. LiAngelo, what he did was dumb. UCLA's punishment, I thought, was an overreach. But still, like, to pull him out, that changes his career forever. Because, like, we've all admitted, LiAngelo is the worst out of the three of them.
Oh, yeah, we know.
So, like,
he's the one who needed to stay in college.
Yeah,
like,
to develop.
But I guess who knows? That's why I'm asking the rest of you is like, is that a viable strategy to take your kids and be like, well, they'll play together and dominate whatever foreign league. I don't know if they're playing the Filipino basketball league or where.
They should play in China.
His plan is to have them play together, even though one of them is like 13 years old or whatever.
His goal is for them to be playing together overseas.
Right.
So he can show like, this is what the Ball brothers do. And I don't know if that's, I mean, is the competition good enough?
Yeah, the competition's decent. I mean, there's been people who went over for a year instead of going to college to play and came back and got drafted. The issue with this strategy, I think, is that the middle brother was never perceived to be good enough to play in the league anyway. So the chances are he's not going to just magically develop into an NBA prospect by playing overseas.
Or is it like a Trump move? He's like, I'm not going to let my son fail in America, so I'll obscure his failure by taking him to a foreign league.
Could be. But also with the youngest son, I just know that there's been a lot of prospects that go over there and become extremely depressed because it's culturally just like completely different, shut off, and you're playing in a league with like a bunch of like middle-aged Italian men. You're like a 17-year-old dude from Chino Hills.
Like, what are you going to do? Yeah.
Yeah. It's ruining
his life.
Yeah. It's not good for him, but I'm sure LeVar's like, no, but it'll be with me. So.
And like, once you sign with an agent, at that moment, completely ineligible to play NCAA basketball?
I'm pretty sure. I've never heard of somebody sign with an agent and then like beg the NCAA to let them back in.
Right. But usually like when you do that, the NCAA is like, okay, so you've made your choice.
Yeah. You're no longer a amateur. Which is
LeVar, just, you know, like the one thing I'll back you on is trolling Donald Trump.
Yes.
But stop meddling with your children's future.
But is it worth it though? That's what I'm saying. It's like LeVar Ball going after Trump and like, being like this, like big bad man against like corporations, like is this really worth all this trash that he's doing? Like,
I don't know. I mean, we'll find out.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel bad for his kids for sure. They seem to like even Lonzo. I feel like is still like sort of fucked up because of
He's playing garbage because everyone in the league is like targeting.
They're coming
him
for him they're
because
like, oh,
they're
really?
Just like, oh, your dad's gonna talk shit. Bet like I'm gonna fuck you up.
I will render you inert on this court.
And also he has the personality of somebody who's like always had somebody else fight his battles for him. Like there was that fight where the Lakers got into a fight and he just completely walked away from it.
Yeah.
Like in a way that was not very, I don't know. As a teammate, I would not have let that shit stand.
I'm pretty sure his teammates hate him.
Right. Yeah. So, it's a tough, because the whole thing is that he's a, like fun person to play with. He like keeps the ball zipping around and he's a distributor, but I just think he's kind of been fucked by LeVar. And then just the very last thing in this first section before we go to break, I wanted to talk about the Rand Paul saga. The mystery surrounding Rand Paul getting his ass whooped by his neighbor. So he was mowing his lawn and his neighbor apparently just came up and
jumped him,
beat the shit out of him. His neighbor, also a doctor, was, I think, like in his 50s, maybe.
Yeah. And he broke, I think, 5 or 6 of Rand Paul's ribs.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Just a straight ass kicking. And so allegedly the thing that they've said is that, oh, it was about a dispute because Rand Paul, when he mowed his lawn, his clippings would go on to his neighbor's lawn, and like that pissed his neighbor off. But neither of them have commented on it. Like what through spokespeople, and they just have kept really like mysteriously quiet about it. So I don't know. It's just one of those interesting stories that I don't totally trust it. I think.
I mean, on one side, right? Like some people say this has been going on for years. He's like, yo, your riding mower keeps blowing clippings onto my fucking property and you need to clean it. Rand Paul's like, dude, I don't give a fuck. And I think so. One narrative is like, that's been going on for so many years that finally this dude just broke and was like, that's it. I'm like, you're going to catch these hands. But the other one is maybe there's a much darker story that we don't know about. And that's the one I'm hoping it is because I don't want this to be about two middle-aged dudes fighting over yard clippings.
Right.
I want it to be like intrigue and affairs and lust or something.
I mean, this sounds like a movie, really. Like it's like like a Coen Brothers movie where he wakes up every day and sees this dude just blowing up on his lawn, and then he goes to work and he's emasculated at work.
Right.
He comes back and his wife's just like, I'm probably going to go to bed.
Right.
I'm tired.
Yeah. And then he just keeps watching this dude mow on his lawn. And then
I'm going on a baby moon with Rand.
What?
What the fuck?
And that's and then he steps out and is like, get your clippings off my lawn. Sure. I don't give a fuck.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. This beats this nigga's ass. That shit's funny as fuck.
That is my theory, is that something happened. The mowing of another man's lawn was metaphorical rather than literal.
But, yeah. Oh, my God.
It's just worth keeping an eye on. Before we go out, Edgar, it's been a pleasure, as always, having you. Where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Awfulgram. On Twitter at Edgar Montplaisir. That's MOMPLAISIR. And then check me out at the UCB pretty much every day with Teams Arcade Currency or Leroy.
You can also find Edgar on the upcoming podcast from the How Stuff Works West Coast offices.
West Coast?
And that podcast is called Culture Kings, and it is Edgar. Who's on it with you, Edgar?
Me, the amazing Carl Tart, the smooth Jaquise Neal. We talk about everything, just three black comedians giving you their rawest takes. Check us out on the How Stuff Works Network, January 10th. We've already started recording, and I've already said some insane things. Give you a sneak preview. We try to guess who the next Michael Jackson is.
It's
amazing.
An amazing podcast. And
glad to have it on this network.
Having it on our network. Miles, where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles Gray.
And you can follow me at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page, Daily Zeitgeist. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. And we have a webpage, dailyzeitgeist.com, where you can find our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to all the sources and actual journalism that we back all this crazy bullshit up with. And that's going to do it for today. And we're going to ride out on a musical recommendation from Miles. Miles, what tell people about this song?
You know, because last time people didn't get enough of the music, so we're going to bless them with another recommendation.
Don't be cocky about it.
Yeah, well, you know, let me get my shine, because I don't get to tell people that I'm the founder of an amazing website. I don't have any bona fide, so let me hang my hat on the fact that I have good musical taste. So this one is a Dolly Parton track, Jolene. Very great. I love it. One of my favorite Dolly Parton songs. But this is a flipped version, so they slowed it down so it has, like, the vibiest version. It's like Dolly Parton chopped and screwed.
Right.
So this is Jolene, played at 33 RPM.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you. Beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring, your voice is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene. Talks about you in his sleep, and there's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. And I can easily understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene. Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. just because you care. You could have your choice of men, but I could never love again. He's the only one for me, Jolene. Have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you and whatever you decide to do, Jolene.